What is up, our friends from the internet? It's a Tech Yeah Games podcast once again coming at you, I guess live for us, not for you. I'm your host, Tony, here with my amazing co-host, Leo.
Happy to be here. Super excited to talk about some games, some weird gaming news.
Yeah, I'm happy to have you too. It is a strange news cycle this week, so I'm excited to talk about it too. But before we do that, Leo, how's your week going? What did you get into this week?
That was pretty, you know, pretty unremarkable week. Just worked a bunch, but I did play some games. I played a lot of Final Fantasy 14. I finally got that mount, the giant cactus.
Oh, nice.
That's 2 million gold saucer points. Because I realized with the new event, one of the prizes you can earn is like MGP points, basically. Mm-hmm. And I was already pretty close. So I cashed in a couple of those, then did one more fashion report, and I finally got a 2 million gold mount, which I've been saving up for like, I think, a year or so. Pretty casually. Like, I wasn't grinding for it. I was just doing like the fashion report every week unless it was too expensive. But it was pretty exciting. It's something I've been working towards for a long time. And in between that and then all the other mounts I earned through this event, I have like quite a collection of mounts now, which I realize is kind of my favorite part of the game, is just kind of collecting mounts and having cool, crazy, magical creatures to ride or like carry me around.
Yeah, the game has a very good like minion and mount farming cycle, yeah. Right? That is a lot of fun to participate in.
And they're just cool. They're very creative mounts. Like the Deathclaw one that like grabs you and picks you up by your back, yeah, and like carries you around. It's so cool. Like, I've seen a lot of mounts in other games, but I feel like these are the most creative and sort of the most esoteric. And like, I got that cool bomb chariot where it's just like bombs floating and you have like a cool swing and you just sit on it. There's just a bunch of really neat ones. And then there's the standard ones too, like crazy magic horses and wolves and stuff. But I'm pretty interested in the very like Final Fantasy-esque strange monsters that you can kind of ride around in very sort of awkward ways. And then when they're all flying through the air, they always look very funny.
Yeah, I love the flying animations. Like, they always do something fun with the flying animation that like you kind of don't expect. I love the catfish mount I have. The Namazu, the Pelican mount, they're all running under it, carrying you around, right? Then when you fly, they dangle like they're falling, like they're gonna fall off. It's so fun.
Yeah, that's what I mean. They put a lot of effort into that. I always wonder if they design mounts and then they're like, yeah, this is cool, approved. And they're like, how are you gonna make it fly? And they're like, oh shit, I forgot about that.
Yeah, or maybe they start with flying. They're like, wouldn't it be funny if? And then they're like, yeah, now what are we gonna do from there? But but yeah, I also played a lot of Final Fantasy 14, so I'm with you there, buddy.
Yeah, it's fun. I did a little bit more of the main missions, but mostly I was just kind of farming, you know, just casually farming those tombstones, kind of trying to. I pretty much have everything I want, but I figure I might as well keep doing it and getting even more, you know? Why not? It's kind of fun.
I watched a YouTube video, it was kind of older one, about like, you know, top 10 glamour pieces or whatever. Like, and so I just started looking at all these glamour pieces, and then I was like, I got to run some content. I got to find these pieces, right? So I started doing a bunch of dungeons I've never done before, right? It's so funny when I've played this game for so long, and it's like, oh, this drops out of this dungeon. And I'm like, where the fuck is that, right?
Yeah,
and
I've never heard of that before.
Yeah, then I Google it, and it's like, oh, you got to go do this quest chain to unlock it. And I'm like, really? Like, I've never done this dungeon? Like, yeah. And then you go find it and run it, and you're like, oh, this is cool. Like, I can't believe I never have seen this before, you know?
Yeah, it's just so massive. There's so much in that game. It's really quite remarkable.
So massive. It's great.
It is cool. So yeah, I played some more of that. But what I played the most of, I played a little bit more Resident Evil. I beat it as Chris. I think I'm done with that game for now. But I played a lot of Assassin's Creed Valhalla, which we talked about last week. And I was a little bit down on it. But I've sort of turned around on it. And here's why. The main thing is the tone has changed dramatically and is much more lighthearted now. Like, the further I got into the game, the more sort of bizarre and really quite funny at times the side quests and the character interactions started becoming. It's still pretty serious in the main quest, but there's some like genuinely pretty interesting stuff. Like, there's one example of just a random side quest you can stumble upon is this guy who has an axe in his head. And he's just sitting there all like zoned out. And you come up to him and you're like, hey, what's going on with you? And he's like, hey, I was in a battle and like my head is all itchy. I feel like, is there something on it? Is there like a bug on it or something? And you can like choose whether or not to tell him that he has this axe sticking out of his brain. And you talk to him for a while and you can actually choose when you want to pull it out, because he dies as soon as you do that. But he tells like the whole story of his battle and like, I don't know, I'm not doing a great job describing it, but it was kind of cool and sort of almost touching in a way, and also kind of funny. And it was just a random side quest. You just kind of, you're running through and you just stumble upon this guy. And there's a lot of that in the side stories, and it's all optional, and it's all pretty interesting. Like, it's much, much less serious than it my initial impression was, and that makes me like it a lot more.
Yeah, no, I always... So I have not played it. I did hear about the Axe side mission. That has come up.
Oh, did you?
That's funny.
I hadn't heard about it.
That has come up in the past, and I don't know who I heard it from, but that's definitely been something that's been kind of talked about in that game, that it's kind of a specifically good side mission or interesting.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you know, I think that's good. I think games need lightheartedness, right? Kind of, because they can be so heavy sometimes. And
yeah, and especially when they don't... it's just so easy to come across as trying too hard, right? And a great way to alleviate that is to have fun at your kind of own expense and not be afraid to kind of, yeah, to have your character do dumb shit and appear stupid sometimes. I think it's just a really good way to undercut and actually in some ways add, not undercut in a negative way, but kind of add gravitas when it is serious. It sort of frees you up to take it more seriously, if that makes sense, or maybe that's just a personal thing.
Well, and I think there's a reality to characters that aren't, you know, always stoic, right? Like there's a,
yeah.
There's a realness there that is, you know, palatable. And it's sometimes hard to, deal with these characters that are just a 100 all the time. Like serious.
Yeah, exactly.
Like it's all about killing and being stone faced and serious. And, so it is
It just gets old.
Yeah, that's why I love Yakuza so much, right? Like,
yeah, Yakuza's masterful at that, of like super serious and then just utterly off the wall. And this actually kind of has a, sort of a similar vibe. They're very, very different games. But in terms of that really just completely off the wall and then just totally back to serious at the flip of a dime, I actually kind of find that pretty fun. I could see how it would be immersion breaking or sort of tonally dissonant for some people, but I actually really like it, I found.
Yeah.
The other two things that made me like it more is, A, the main character has really grown on me. She's fucking hilarious. She's really funny. She's really smart, like very wise. She says a lot of like cool, wise things. She's extremely badass, and she's just... It's a cool combination of like friendly and smart and just absolutely bloodthirsty and loves fighting and killing, but not in like a malicious way. She just thinks it's fun.
That's kind of malicious.
Yeah, I suppose, but she's not like killing for... Yeah, I guess so. It's like... But it's not like Kratos malicious, you know? It's more like Worf from Star Trek.
I mean,
if that makes sense.
Okay.
It's like fun to fight, not like, well, anyway, maybe you're right. But she had a great line, for example, and this kind of ties into the second point. She was fighting this Christian guy, and he's an asshole. And she goes, what does she say? It was such a great line, and her accent's awesome. I'm not going to do it justice, but she says something along the lines of like, I hope that your hell is real so that you could see it. Like, she just says cool shit like that all the time.
That contains malice.
It's really
just
fun.
Just heads up. That statement
alone
is pretty
malicious.
Yeah, but
she's smiling at the time, so it's cool.
It's funny. It's funny malice, so I'm into it. But that is, like, by definition, malice. It's just,
I suppose you're right.
Just heads up.
I guess there's a difference between, like, I don't know. Maybe you're right. But anyway, all that to say, she's very cool. Very interesting and very funny. And I'm really enjoying spending time playing as her a lot more than I thought I would at first. The other thing that's interesting as far as it being an Ubisoft product is it goes to some remarkably dark places in like a pretty serious, not serious way, sort of lighthearted way, but they get to very dark places in a way that Ubisoft, in my mind, has always really shied away from. There's a lot of conversations about religion because, you know, you're Norse invaders from Norway invading Christian lands. So there's a lot of like really dark conversation around religion and like paganism and like some pretty interesting actual conversations about it. There's an example. There's this one guy you run across who's like this super pious monk. And he's like, just destroy all my stuff. It's fine. I'm so pious. It doesn't matter. And so you destroy all the stuff and it slowly escalates to the point where you uncover this dungeon that he's built in his house and he's just murdering people. And he switched over to this so you'd destroy the evidence for him. And it turns out he's like not a real Christian at all. And he's just using it as a cover for his heinous crimes. And it ended up being this pretty intense conversation. And I was like, see, this is actually way more interesting than anything in The Division, anything in Far Cry, which sort of posit themselves as vaguely edgy, but completely shy away from it. And it was kind of cool to see it, even though it's buried in sort of a side mission. I was like, this is way more emotionally engaging than I think anything Ubisoft has made in the last 10 years. And it's just a random side quest. So I got to give it credit for that as well.
Yeah, Ubisoft does tend to be pretty soft on that stuff. You know, it's one of the things
I love. Use it for marketing and then run away from it. Yeah. And this is not doing that, which I kind of respect.
One of the things I really love about like Viking fiction or whatever is that, right? Like the inevitable conflict between like paganism and Christianism and or Christianity and paganism. And like that intersectionalism is like so fun to experience with them, right? Just because of the nature of those two religions, especially at that time, right? The seriousness and the weight of Christianity at that time, and just the wildness of paganism, and even in that malice, like you're saying, it's so fun, and it's like, you know, I think that's also kind of goes hand in hand with that, just this. This kind of celebration of death and violence that seems to be so present in Viking fiction, you know?
Yeah. Well, and the final thing too is, and it ties to what you just said, it's because it's kind of like a games as a service game vaguely. All that shit can be ignored, which I appreciate. But if you want, you can like buy cosmetics or weird booster packs, which I'm like, why would you buy a booster pack?
Gotta get
like,
some booster packs.
I just put the difficulty on easy because I wanted to feel like a powerful Viking, and it made it way more fun. And I was like, why would you? It's very weird to me that you'd rob yourself of that, but whatever. It's totally optional. But anyway, because it's games of the service, they have this cool Ostar Festival, which is like the pagan version of Easter around the equinox or the solstice, whichever one it is. But it's like an actual festival in your village, and everything's all decorated, and there's like cool activities. You can unlock like funny cosmetics, like cool like hair flowers and shit. And it's kind of neat to like participate in a pagan festival in a game. I don't think I've ever done that. And I was raised sort of pagan, so it's kind of cool to be able to, I don't know, it's just fun. It's fun that because it's Easter, they're like going back to what Easter originally was. And it's sort of neat to see that in a game. I'd never seen that before. And I'm actually planning on playing it tomorrow to unlock some of the rest of the cosmetics, just because I thought it'd be a fun way to celebrate the holiday with my pagan friends.
Your pagan brothers.
Yeah. I mean. So anyway, I played it a lot. And all that to say, I've been really enjoying it. I think bumping the difficulty down to the lowest setting helped a lot. Because I don't play Assassin's Creed for the combat. I think it's okay at best, but it's just not, you know, if I want challenging combat, I'm not going to get it from an Assassin's Creed game. So just bumping the difficulty down so I'm an unstoppable beast and just running around doing weird side missions, exploring the beautiful environments and, you know, enjoying the story has turned out to be pretty mindless fun, but really fun. I still have the same complaints of the game is so glitchy. It just feels like it's collapsing under its own weight in a lot of ways. In terms of, I get the sense, I haven't played Cyberpunk, but I get the sense it's kind of similar there. Like, it's just so system heavy that the game just can't quite keep up. So it works fine 90% of the time. It's never crashed or bugged a mission or like reset progress, which to me is sort of the ultimate sin as far as glitches go. But there's some serious like AI problems and pathing issues and weird like just completely immersion breaking stuff that, again, the fact the game is sort of lighthearted sort of helps with that in a way, tonally. It doesn't come across as quite as immersion-breaking, but it is, no question, it's pretty lame. And I do wish, like I said last week, I wish they'd strip some of the systems out and really focus more on polishing what's there instead of trying to continually expand it and then have it collapse under its own weight.
Yeah, it is strange. I do feel like a lot of modern games really are on this razor's edge, you know, when you play them. You know, even like Call of Duty games, which I think are, for what they are, extremely polished. Like,
yeah, and relatively straightforward by comparison.
And
too,
the last two games, I feel like you run those things and it feels like a paper model. You know what I mean? Like if you grab it too hard, it's gonna explode. You know, like you can just feel it, like the tension in like mm-hmm. the engine and these pieces trying to hold together. Yeah,
it's like almost uncomfortable, it's, you know, in a weird way. You're like, I don't want to break. It's like playing with a very delicate toy.
Yeah, like, you know, like if I just do the right thing here or the wrong thing here, right? Like, this thing is just gonna explode. And
totally.
And I think, you know, I think the Call of Duties do a good job of like, yeah, it might feel like that, but we've kind of gone through the motions and made sure it's not actually going to explode. Like, it might crash sometimes, but it's been pretty rare in those games. But they still carry that tension somehow in a way that is, like, disconcerting, you know? And I feel like Cyberpunk is like the example of what happens if you don't, like, shore up those holes enough, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like when that tension exists, but you haven't had the time or the resources to, like, you know, put enough zip ties on to make sure it doesn't actually
enough duct tape
fall apart. Yeah. You know, 'cause because it's that it is that same feeling in a game where it's like man, this thing is really like it's really taut, on the edge, right? It's really tense, like holding it together.
Yeah, it's like a very beautiful person who's emotionally completely volatile. I know. Like, oh, they're so nice to look at, but like, oh god, if you talk to them, they'll fucking beat your ass and die. And the truth is, it doesn't have to be that way. I know it's a resource issue, and it's like, but it also does showcase priority, right? Like something like Cyberpunk or this or many other games, certainly not unique to these two, shows like, hey, they are prioritizing adding more shit to it to make it a bigger game over polishing what's there already. And that's just the reality of it. And that is a conscious choice they're making because it'll sell more copies. I understand it's a practical thing, but I keep thinking if they just stripped out, I don't know, 30-40% of the stuff in Assassin's Creed Valhalla that most people aren't going to see, or that is just like, you know, skill trees and shit like that, and just really maybe make the land mass much smaller and just really dial in and focus on AI and pathing and collision detection and all that shit, and just made it super solid, it would just be a profoundly better game, and it would let the many strengths of the game shine in a way that right now it's sort of obfuscated by jank and you know, just bloat, really, like I said last week. So, but anyway, despite all that, I'm having a blast with it in sort of a mindless, like, yeah, I find myself, when those games work well, it's very much like, well, I'll just run over there to get the, you know, that tower real quick, and I'll stop. And they're like, oh, well, I'm right next to a gold thing. I'll just go solve that puzzle real quick. And, well, this quick combat encounter, and then again, 2 hours have passed, and you're like, oh, shit. That's a sign of a good game, I think, when it can kind of keeps you from not playing it.
Yeah, I mean, well, definitely a game that was designed with the player in mind, right? Like, thoughtfully.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, anyway, that's my piece on Assassin's Creed, but it is nice that I've sort of turned a corner on it, and I'm really enjoying the shit out of it now. I'm looking forward to doing some Easter stuff tomorrow. But that's pretty much it. I played a little bit of Smash Brothers, which was terrible. I'm so bad at it. And some other random games, but nothing super exciting. What did you get up to this week? Anything exciting to report?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, moving on to news.
No. You know, I a lot of the usual suspects this week, really. Like, I didn't get into a lot of new stuff. I was still playing Monster Hunter. I played so much Monster Hunter this week. I think that's really
Yeah, that's great.
That's really the culprit in all this, is that when I had free time, I played a lot of fucking Monster Hunter. Like, so much Monster Hunter that my friends...
Did you hunt any monsters?
I hunted a lot of fucking monsters, so my friend. Many monsters. So many monsters. They are dead. There are so many dead monsters everywhere that now I am the
littering
monster.
Littering the landscape.
Yeah, littering. I have the bones of monsters just filling my bags currently, and I don't even know what to do with it. I really like this Monster Hunter. I mean, I like Monster Hunter, yeah. So it's inevitable that I think I would like this one. But yeah, man, I love Monster Hunter. It's so good. The online has been great. I will say,
nice. That's good
for a pop.
It's a surprising thing.
Yeah, surprising thing. For a pop in, pop out, like, you can literally just from anywhere open up a thing, pick a mission, and it'll just find a matchmake for that mission, and it works. I haven't gotten disconnected at all, you know, like, it's just surprisingly functional, and that's surprising for Nintendo, and it's surprising for Monster Hunter, like two companies that don't do online very well at least found a way to make this work and be painless and get you in and out. And so
I mean, credit where credit's due, you know.
Yeah, so I really appreciate that. But yeah, man, I don't have a ton to say about Monster Hunter, just because for one, we talked about it last week, and I don't want to just reiterate all the same points. But two, I think people, it's a known quantity really what Monster Hunter is, you know, and I think people have a pretty good idea if they give a shit or not about Monster Hunter. And I think that's pretty fair. I definitely don't think it's a game for everybody. It's funny, my friend, I was talking to him. I saw him online on Switch, and I texted him because I haven't talked to him in a while. And I was like, well, what were you playing? And I'm like, oh, I've been playing a lot of Monster Hunter. And they're like, oh, do you think I'd like that? And I said, no. You know, I was just like, no. Yeah. Like, that's not, you know, they're...
Yeah, I've heard a lot of discourse around the game. It does sound interesting. And a lot of that discourse has been, you know, Monster Hunter is notoriously impenetrable, right? As far as systems, and they keep stripping, from what I understand. I'm a great example of someone who's not engaged with it because I find it very intimidating. much like a real monster. But they keep saying, like, if they could just get it to make it friendly for newcomers, then it would be, like, you know, it was already, Monster Hunter World was a huge hit and brought a lot of people in. And I guess what I mean is a lot of people are like, what's the best Monster Hunter to start with? And so far, there hasn't really been a good one. And that's not a slight at the game, necessarily. It's just it knows what it's good at. There's nothing wrong with making, you know, a pure experience. But I wonder if they ever will make, like, one that's a little more accessible, or if that would kind of strip away what makes the game special in the first place. I don't really know.
Yeah, I doubt it. I think it would, like, you know, it's funny you say that, but a lot of the discourse I see around Monster Hunter, because, like, I follow a lot of, like, Monster Hunter people, is like, this game's too simple, it's stupid, it's for babies, right. It's exactly. There's not enough,
and even that's too intimidating. Yeah. So it's like, there is definitely a discordance there between what people want. Which is sort of interesting.
Yeah, well, it's kind of what makes it Monster Hunter, right? And
yeah,
it's the same thing with, like, Souls games or whatever, right? Like,
absolutely.
Like, give us an easy mode in Souls. It's like, that's not what Dark Souls is. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or I think it's kind of similar with Monster Hunter. I will say, if you need to find an entry point into Monster Hunter, the new game is the best entry point, you know?
More so than World, do you think?
If you have a Switch, yeah. Right.
I suppose.
I think if you want to try, like, on PC, like, you don't need to wait a year. Like, World is still a good entry point. But, you know, I think the thing that I will say this, the one point I think that makes this game a little better than World as far as an entry point is. So in combat and Monster Hunter, like having your weapon unsheathed and sheathed is, like, a big part of the mechanic, right? Like, if your weapon's on your back, you can sprint around, you can dive around, you can move fast. Like, you can get a lot of stuff done. But it's also when you can use items, like drink potions or sharpen your weapon or do all those things, right? But a lot of those things hinder your movement, right? So if you're going to sharpen your weapon, you got to literally stop and be like, you know, it's just an animation that takes, like, 5 seconds or something. If you're going to drink a potion, you slow walk while you drink it. It takes a few seconds and then you heal up, right? So all those things, like, can be, for one, that they do that because if you're doing it when you're fighting a monster, it's super dangerous, right? Like, it, like, stopping to drink a potion while you're fighting a monster, you do it, but you know, like, I can't just sit here and chug potions.
It'd be like a Souls game, right? Where it's like, you can heal, but you're going to very much open yourself up to get your ass kicked.
Yeah, if I just sit here and chug potions, I'm going to die, right? So what they do in Monster Hunter Rise, which I think is cool, is you have a dog you can ride. And if you ride your dog, you can use stuff while you're on your dog. You could sharpen your weapon while you're riding your dog. So you can stay mobile.
Seems dangerous, but okay.
Yeah, for your dog. But no, so so you can use items while you're in motion, right? And I think that streamlines moving around. It makes it so, like, if you're in a fight and it's like your weapon's dull and you just can't hit them right, you know, your weapon gets dull and you can't, like, cut the monster anymore, it'll just bounce. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're like, I can't cut this monster. My weapon's too dull. I got no more stamina. I need to drink a potion. Like, I'm in a real fucking sort right now. You know, you can just kind of back off, jump on your dog, and just kind of circle the arena. Right. And, like, sharpen your weapon and be relatively safe, you know, and still watch the monster and dodge. And I think that adds a lot of, it makes it feel a lot more fair, right? Because I think sometimes in previous Monster Hunters, you would get kind of deep into a fight. You'd be like, I've spent fucking 20 minutes wailing on this monster, and now I'm at a point where I am, like, fucking out of stuff. I can't get my weapon sharpened. I can't find a chance to get more stamina back. Like the battle of attrition has been lost, and I am in such a bad spot right now. And at least this gives you, like, a more fair, I think, chance to kind of reset, right?
Yeah, that is cool.
Which I think adds a lot.
I could see how that could make a big difference. It also sounds, and again, this is all coming from the outside perspective, but it sounds like the movement and the addition of that, like, grappling hook bug thing or whatever it is, sounds like it also added a lot of cool, like, possibilities for combat, but also just kind of opens up the game in a way that does, certainly sounds enticing to me.
Yeah, wire bug's super fun. Especially, like, once you get good at it, right? Like, you know, at first it seems cumbersome, and you're like, I'm not really going to use this very much. And then you realize, like, oh, this is great. And, you know, it's funny because the maps in Monster Hunter are always, like, they're pretty big, but a lot of times it's, like, winding, right? Like, it'll be a big, long path, and then a U, and then another big long path. In reality, as the crow flies, you're very close to the monster. But, yeah, you know, as far as traveling, it's a long walk. But now you got wire bugs, and you can just, like, zip up any wall, run up, and, like, literally fucking dive off the top of the map with your sword out and slash into this monster. And you're like, this is fucking cool, man. Like, you know, I've never been able to do that before. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, that does sound cool. That sounds like a nice addition. I mean, yeah, I'm considering giving it a shot, maybe when it's a little bit cheaper.
Yeah, you should give it a try.
And Monster Hunter World, I think, is included with PS4 Greatest Hits or whatever.
Yeah,
right?
I could even
try that out if I wanted to.
Yeah, I would say, I was kind of my point about which one to jump into. Like, if you got a Switch and you want to try the new one, try it. But if you have a PS5,
maybe I should try the demo.
If you have a PS5 and you want to try World for free, or you see a discount on Steam and you want to play it on PC, which I will say it's much better on PC. Just visually. I don't know how it looks on PS5. Actually, I haven't tried it, but you know, if that's kind of the spot you're in, like, don't be afraid to try World. It's also very good, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah. Nice. Other than that, the only thing I really played was Final Fantasy 14, as always. Jumped in, did some glamours.
Yeah, you looked good. You sent me some screenshots. Character looks dope. She's got cool glasses.
She does got cool glasses. Yeah, I spent some money on some premium Mog Station items. Those were pretty cheap though, so I'm not too upset about it.
I don't mind giving them money. They're just so they're just so wonderful.
They're so into it, man. Like, fucking Yoshi P loves this game, right?
Yeah, exactly. It just comes through so much. Like, they clearly care in a way that's pretty, it's hard not to be charmed by it.
Yeah, it's so nice that they're into it, you know? Like,
yeah,
like, we're all into this game and it's so cool. And I was happy to drop $10 on a couple item sets and farm for some items, and it was just a good time. I love Final Fantasy 14, man. It's so good.
Yeah, it's very good. I had one last bit of thing to tell you before we go to break.
Uh-oh.
I also got a Switch Lite.
Oh, my man. Welcome to the
club.
Yeah,
I got it used, and it's cool. It's an interesting piece of hardware. It's like, I like it. Overall, it feels cheaper, which makes sense. It is, but it also feels more stable and sturdy in a way because it is just one piece of plastic. I got a little cute little case for it, and I definitely think I'll use it as my, you know, my sort of travel Switch, because it's a little, I don't know. It just has that vibe where it's like, I wouldn't be afraid to put in a suitcase, where my other Switch just feels way more fragile and, you know, premium in some ways, but also just sort of like it could break at any moment, kind of like Assassin's Creed Valhalla. Pretty to look at, but could break at any moment. And this feels much more sturdy and kind of like, I wouldn't really mind if, you know, if I dropped it or something, it feels like it would be fine, versus this Switch feels like it could explode at any moment if you hit it on the edge of anything.
Yeah, I agree.
And I do like the way the buttons feel. They feel a little more mushy, but it actually kind of works. Again, it reminds me of sort of a DS vibe, and I really like those portable consoles. So yeah, it's cool. I don't have a huge amount to say on it, except they sure make it difficult to have two Switches. You have to have like a primary one, and then the Switch that's not your primary Switch has to connect to the internet to play any game you download, which kind of sucks if you're traveling.
Yeah, it sucks. Like,
it's a lame way to do it. Like, I see what they were thinking, but it's like, really? Luckily, this is a great example of why it's good to have cartridges, because most of my games are cartridge-based, so I can use those, no problem. But that also means I have to carry the cartridge with me.
Just mod your first Switch and say fuck it.
No, I don't want to do that.
Just do it. Get it banned. Who cares?
I don't think I can.
Why? Oh, it's not the moddable? It's too new?
Yeah, they're all too new. My Animal Crossing Switch as well.
Yeah, your Animal Crossing Switch definitely is.
Yeah, so unfortunately, I don't think I can. I was actually looking in, like, well, what can I do with the Lite? And it seems like it's pretty locked down, which was sort of impressive by Nintendo. I was like, whoa, as far as I know, no one's managed to do anything useful with it. Outside of, you know, running Linux or whatever shit they're doing, but nothing piracy friendly. And I'm not even like that interested in piracy necessarily. Like, I can afford to buy games, but I think it's a really good way to try games. I know it sounds so silly, but it's kind of true.
I don't know. I don't care about piracy. It doesn't bother me at all. That's another thing that I think has come up a lot recently. Just kind of talks about game piracy, and it's like, especially with all this like PS3, PSP Vita stuff, right? Like, people have been talking about piracy a lot, and I may sound like a bad person, but I've never cared about it. It's like when Metallica complains about music piracy. It's like, you know, the only games truly affected by piracy are wildly popular, profitable games. You know, like, no company goes down because, you know, 12-year-olds that couldn't afford it downloaded it, or, you know, or shitty adults that wouldn't have bought it downloaded it. You know,
I agree. I 100%. I don't think it's a more, I mean, I guess it does kind of depend on the game you're buying. Like, you know, there are, you know, I'd imagine it would impact a smaller studio more than a bigger one. But even so, I think you're right. It's like, no one's going to go to business because of it. It's really, at this point, it's a matter of convenience.
Yeah.
Pirating is less convenient than buying a game now. And also I have more money than I did when I was young. So it's like buying a game on Steam for, $8 is way more convenient than having to pirate it. Which is good, right? I mean, that's the best way to combat piracy, is make games affordable and convenient. And that was the issue for a long time, is they were neither.
Yeah, that's what I mean. If you're...
So I think that's gone a long way towards reducing piracy. But, like, yeah, for me at least.
If you're a small studio and you got a $15 game on Steam, it's easier to buy it than it is to pirate it. And so that's why it works, right? That's why the system works.
Yeah, that's how it should be.
If you're a small studio and you got a fucking shitty game and it's $60 on Steam... I'm gonna try it first, you know, I understand we can't just whole hog say piracy is fine, right? Because that kind of kills the equilibrium of it, you know, the justification of paying and not paying. But it doesn't bother me in any way. I just don't see, you know, I think we're a little too precious with game development, and that kind of leads to another story we'll talk about when we get after the break. But I think that there's, you know, we're a bit too white glove with how we treat kind of games and what they are. But take a quick break, because that's all I played this week.
And, sweet. Yeah. You know, sounds good.
We'll dig into this more after the break. Leo, did you pirate any games over the break?
No, I was playing my Switch Lite, though, smashing them buttons, looking at the very, not very good screen. But, again, it's designed for travel. I'm really glad it's not my only Switch, I will say. But it's cool. It's a cool little piece of tech.
Yeah, I'd be more bothered by the bad screen if the original Switch also didn't have a bad screen. Because you're not...
Yeah, but you can plug it into my very nice TV.
And then it really looks great. Like,
well, depending on what you're playing. But yeah, that's true. It's just not a...
Yeah. Playing Switch on a 4 screen to play pretty is games. So bad. Like, you know, I played Zelda mostly handheld and was like, oh, this is cool. You know, like, this looks fine. And then I plug it into a TV and I'm just like, fuck, man, this is so, like, so rough. Like, it's so bad.
I played it mostly on TV. I think you just get used to it, maybe.
Yeah. I mean,
I played my Switch almost entirely on my TV and it's fine.
No, it's not.
It is fine because I know what it is. Again, if it was my only console, it'd be one thing, but I'm like, I have totally reasonable expectations.
Okay.
Unlike some people, apparently.
I think my phone looks better when casted to my TV than my Switch. Let's just say that.
My phone definitely looks better.
You know, and so if that's like, I don't know, that just seems...
It's a low bar.
Yeah, it's a low bar, I guess. My phone does a lot more things than a Switch. All right, so first thing up... story came out, so they released this Ninja Gaiden, what do they call it, like a remastered collection or what?
Yeah,
Ninja Gaiden, what the fuck is the actually release called, Ninja Gaiden Master Collection, and in it they had to use what they called the Sigma versions of Black and Ninja Gaiden 2, and that's because they just don't have the first ones, like,
yeah,
they're just like, we don't know where they are. Here's the quote. However, we were unable to salvage the varying assortment of data we had left from Ninja Gaiden Black and Ninja Gaiden 2. And for that very reason, we currently don't have any plans of remastering Ninja Gaiden and Ninja Gaiden 2 on non-Xbox platforms. Because the Sigma versions were like Xbox Live versions, I believe. Or like
re-released
Xbox versions. And, you know, I saw the story last week. And, you know, we have to get into the specifics of Ninja Gaiden because, I don't know. Ninja Gaiden seemed fine.
Yeah.
It was pretty, but also seemed impossible, like purposely impossible. But, you know, I saw this come up, and we talked about it kind of last week with PS3 and Vita and all this stuff, and just this desire to, like, save every game. You know, a lot of things came up after this, and kind of discourse around, like, you know, this is why we need to archive every game and, you know, the history of games. And, and then, you know, it's just this thought kept permeating my brain, running through my head, right? You know what that thought was, Leo?
What?
Who fucking cares, man? Right? Like who really cares? I understand wanting to... I mean, I understand viewing games as art because there are games that are art. Some very low art. Sure. I mean, everything is art, right? Let's be let's be transparent.
I don't think we need to debate that. Like, yeah, for sure. Some of it's beautiful, wonderful art, and even the shittiest is, I guess, art. But whatever. That doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, art can't really be defined. So by definition, everything is art.
Sure.
You know.
Sure.
And so, like, you know, I don't want to. I want to get that word kind of out of the discussion, right? Because I think it's used as like...
Yeah, we're not trying to preserve video games for the sake of preserving art, I don't think. I think that's kind of a...
Yeah,
that's not,
I think so, really too.
The meat of the discussion, I would think.
I think for some people, that's like the fallback, like, you know, this is why it's important, right? It's art or something, right? But, you know, I look at these things and it's like the people that made these things didn't care. You know, I don't think that the people that made Ninja Gaiden Black, like, really even thought, like, I don't think they want a copy of the source code. You know what I mean? Like, like, outside of you being able to buy a version in modern times, I doubt many people involved with the project, if any, were like, oh, I got to make sure I preserve this copy of Ninja Gaiden Black so I can, like, show my kids, or so, you know, future generations understand the importance of Ninja Gaiden Black, right? And, you know, I think we keep running into this thing where it's like, oh, like, this DLC never got backed up or this thing. And, you know, I just feel like there's these kind of very holy, like arguments about, like, how important they are or whatever. And if it's fucking Mario Brothers or whatever, I guess I get it, you know, but... there's just so many fucking games, man. Like, so many games. And this this thought that, like, there's something... it's fine if you want to back them up, but this thought that there's, like, this flaw in the system of not being able to back them up just seems so... I don't know. Such a waste of energy. You know what I mean? So misplaced.
Yeah. No, I see what you mean. I mean, I'm counterpoint to that. Like, for example, the art that I've created, which is not as good as most games, I always back up because I think it's worth preserving. I think the reason why I think it's worth preserving is because it's fucking easy to preserve because it's digital. That's the thing I think that's irritating, is like, we're not talking about a giant installation in a museum, you know, we're talking about ones and zeros. That's it. So it's like, to me, preserving games seems like it's pretty easy. That's the part that frustrates me, is it's like, and I understand games get very big and very, like, unwieldy and convoluted, especially when you talk about source code, but it's still digital. Like, just fucking get a big hard drive and back everything up onto it. It requires very little effort. And especially old games, right? Like, it's very easy to preserve early games because they're absolutely tiny and you just make a copy of them digitally and you're good. Because in my mind, the only reason to preserve games is because you might want to play them at some point.
Yeah.
And having the option to play them is nice, and not having the option to play them is irritating, even though, as we both know, the vast majority of people are not going to play the vast majority of games. That doesn't mean no one would, though, or that no one's interested in, or that it's not a worthy endeavor if it's straightforward. But I do think your point about, like, well, the fact they lost the code in the first place means they didn't give a shit.
Well,
and if they didn't give a shit, then, like, why should we? I think that's a very good point.
And I think it's complex, right? I think that, like, storing code seems very simple. Like, just put it on a backup, right? And, you know, maybe you save that to the cloud or put it wherever your local backup storage is or whatever you do with that. But, you know, I think the problem comes into, especially with, like, source code, is it's like, it's not, you're not just keeping a backup of, like, the thing you compiled, right? There's so much, there's so much around that exists that you might need if you're backing up this project. And I think a lot of that is things you don't want to, like, be out there, right? Like your personal notes involved in it, right?
Yeah,
like,
that's a good point.
Like, your kind of coding correspondence back and forth, the way you tag things in that code that maybe weren't, you know, is there an obligation now to go clean out your code to make sure it's, like, done in a way...
public-facing worthy.
Yeah, forward-facing worthy.
Yeah, we saw that with that big Nintendo leak, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, like, that came to mind immediately. And that's Nintendo, right? Like, the squeakiest...
Yeah, exactly, of all people. Imagine Platinum, or not Platinum, but Team Ninja, or whoever made these games.
Yeah, it's Team Ninja. But
Team Ninja is not going to be... Not going to be squeaky clean, that's for goddamn sure.
No. And you think of the conversations you have with your coworkers in private while you're working on stuff, working long nights, saying things that aren't representative of who you are, you know?
Or the company.
Or the company.
Especially.
Right? Yeah. And it's like, no, let me back it up. And it's like, fuck you. Like, even
That's a good point.
Even if I back this up myself, there's no way I'm letting someone in the public just have it to distribute it as like, you know, oh, it's an archive. And it's like, it's not that simple. If you want to archive the fucking, you know, the install, right? Like,
yeah,
like,
I mean, that would be my thing, is like, get a disk, back up the disk. But yeah, no, that's a very valid point.
But I don't think you can.
Maybe it should be like up to the artist, to like whether they release it or not somehow. But even that's a logistical nightmare. But that's a really good point. I think people probably don't talk about is like, it's not the obligation of the artist to release something unless they want to.
Yeah, and I don't
because it can be very private.
Yeah, you can't back, you know, like. They're not saying no one has a way to install Ninja Gaiden 1 and 2. I'm sure they could find a disc, right? Like, if they really...
They're just... They don't have the source code to remaster
it. They just don't have the source code, and that's because they didn't want to keep it. And, and yeah, it's not their obligation to, like, want it to be kept or put it out, and I think that...
I think that's a good point. It's the obligation piece of it is something that people don't really, I haven't heard a discussion around that, which we probably should have one at some point. Not me and you necessarily, but like, yeah, it's a good point. If like, what if people don't want their shit backed up?
Yeah. Or what if they don't care, you know?
Yeah. Or what if they don't care? Yeah, totally.
I think that, you know, it's kind of like I was saying before we went to break, is I think that there is this like a minority of people in this industry, right? Like in this fandom, I guess is a better way to say it, but I feel like there are kind of pundits that engage in this too, right? That really want to view development as this kind of grand, like, process, right?
Yeah, and it's like a collectivist, like, yeah, we're all in this together, and it's like, no, it's...
Yeah, this, yeah, this
collectivist... Really true. It's a corporation trying to make a bunch of money.
Yeah, this collectivist dream of, like, bringing our vision to life...
utopia.
...with these, with these suits above us, like, you know, ruining it, right? And, And, you know, I just think that's so misled. And I think that's one of these things that kind of reflects into these kind of like backup moments and stuff. Is it's like these people don't, they might like this game because they made it or think it's cool because they made it, but this isn't their like heart and soul. Like, this isn't their grand vision, right? The people that made this game. If it was, there would be a copy of it, right? Like, they'd be like, this was my fucking opus. You know, of course I have a copy of
Ninja Gaiden 3 was not anyone's
opus.
Not to say no one worked their asses off or like didn't try extremely hard to make it the best game they could, but yeah, I don't think nobody's like, yeah, this is it. I finally have achieved I've fulfilled my artistic vision, finally.
Yeah, they did it as cool as they could. Ninja
Gaiden Black 3.
It was their job.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Like, it was what someone was going to pay them to do. And you know, I just think we need to do better at divorcing ourselves from these kind of idealized versions of what making a game is and what a game is, like, ultimately, right? It's a product, right?
I agree. And it does kind of get in the entitlement thing, too, of, like, no, I'm obligated to have any game I want at any time at the tip of my fingers, and I'm certainly guilty of that, but I would never get upset at a developer. Though I will say that a counterpoint of that is, like, when you think about the Silent Hill HD remasters, right, which was, like, they hired this small studio to remaster two of the most beloved games of all time, Konami did, and they're like, cool, do we have the code? And they're like, eh, not really. We have like 70% of the code. The rest is all in shreds. It's not organized at all. It's totally fucked up. Like, here you go. Better remaster it by like this date. And then anyone who's played the Silent Hill HD remasters knows they're completely fucked on so many levels. And that's why. And I don't think that's the studio's fault, but it's the fact that the source code was not preserved. And these are games that were widely considered like masterpieces and were, even the people who worked on them very hard. So it just goes to show like, the complexity of keeping code around, and maybe it's just Konami being lazy. Who knows, right? I don't think we'll ever get the straight story on what happened there because no one will claim responsibility. But the point is, two games that are absolutely beloved by everyone universally, even they didn't keep the code around for those. So it shows that it's not a simple process, that's for sure.
I just don't think they care. You know? Like, I think to them it's not... it's not a big deal. You know? Like, and it goes back to what you said, this entitlement. Like, so what? So what if people like it? So what if it's a masterpiece, right? Like now, I think in retrospect, the only reason they would care is because it's like, oh, we could have sold that again, right? But that wasn't really something they thought about at the time. And to them, it's like, We made it. We sold it. It's out there. If you want it, buy it. We don't fuck. Yeah, you
can play it.
We're done. We're done now. You know, like
we've all moved on to other things.
This isn't us trying to, this isn't fucking Leonardo da Vinci's sketches, right? Or fucking, you know, something like that.
Yeah. And even those, Leonardo da Vinci could easily be like, no, fuck you. I don't care.
Yeah.
And it'd be like, yeah, fair enough. Like,
well, I'm sure a lot of stuff he sketched, like, he didn't give a shit about, right? And, you know, and he threw them away and wiped his ass with them or used them for other things, right?
And now someone's like, we want to do an HD remaster of your sketch. He's like, too bad.
Yeah, too
check
bad.
The toilet. Some of it might be in there. I don't know.
It's fucking gone.
Well, I'm trying to imagine, like, an email I wrote for work, like, a pretty good email, like, one I was pretty proud of. And then, like, 10 years later, someone's like, hey, man, do you still have that email? We all love it so much. We want to, like, preserve it. I'd be like, no. I'm glad you liked it, but no, I don't fucking have an email backed up from 10 years ago. Like, that was just work.
I mean, even that, like, think about, like, forward-facing things. Think about even, like, articles you wrote, right?
Right.
And sure, you could find the article, like, in WordPress or wherever it was published. Maybe you can't.
Not anymore.
Maybe you can't. Right, but you don't have, like, a doc of every article you've written, right? If you needed...
I do.
You have a doc of every article you've ever written.
Well, I took screenshots of everything before they all went.
No, I mean like the original doc you edited, right? Like,
yeah, I do because it's all on Google.
Oh, well, I guess that's because they back it up for you, right?
Exactly. Yeah. But that's a good point. I probably would if it was Word, but I'm sure it would be exactly like this, where it'd be like half finished drafts or totally disorganized or like, certainly I do not have pristine, perfect, backed up versions of the final draft I submitted to everything. Of course not.
Yeah, I mean, and it gets more...
And that's kind of what we're talking about.
Yeah, even as it gets more complex, like, I've been making emails for the past 10 years. I have none of them. You know what I mean? Like, if you needed... I could, you know, like you said, I could rip code. I could find them and source code them out and pull them out and see if I can still find live links for, like, images and stuff. But, you know, it's not like I keep those raw HTML files and image sources, like, in a...
Yeah.
Those don't get fucking backed up. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like no fucking way. Like, unless they live on the server they're published from, like, yeah, they're gone. Like, who cares? Like, you know, if someone looked at that in retrospect and, you know, if email fucking died in 10 years and someone wanted to, like, recreate all the emails of the world, it's like, nah, man. Like, fucking good luck. I get it.
Also, please don't.
Yeah, please don't. I get it's different. No,
that's like, yeah, for sure. I agree. It's a little bit of a facetious analogy, but I do think the fact remains that whose responsibility is to back it up? Because I will say, if I wrote an email and someone was like, I really want to back this up, and like went and found it, I'd be like, cool, nice. But the idea that they asked me to do anything, I'm not interested in. You know what I mean? Like, if they go back to like 10-year-old, you know, whatever, and find it in some inbox, and they're happy with it and they love it and they preserve it and they think it's great, you know, that would feel nice. But the idea that I have to do anything or have any obligation to be a part of that if I don't want to be, does sort of reek of entitlement in a way that I don't like.
Yeah. I mean, just this idea of someone, even if they didn't ask you at the time, but if in 10 years they were like, hey, where's the backups of all the stuff you ever did? And you're like, I didn't save that stuff. And it's like, we need it. Why do we need it? Because we need to have everything.
Because we want it.
Yeah, we want to have everything. And you're just like, I was just doing my fucking job, man. And I think that's what the stuff kind of boils down to.
It's
like, it's just people doing their jobs. They're definitely not in this mindset of like, oh, what we're making is fucking...
I think some of them are, to be fair.
Those people probably
back up their code.
They back up everything, right?
Because I definitely, if I make something I'm really proud of, I do copy it and back it up safely. But the fact that I do that for very few things just kind of proves the point.
Yeah, right? That's what I mean. Like, you see that, you're like, that kind of does illustrate what we're talking about here, is that not everything will get backed up, even of a mindset where I need to back things up, you know?
Yeah. But I bet Nintendo doesn't ever lose source code, you know?
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure they back up everything, right?
Exactly. Like, it can be done, but again, the only reason they're doing it is because they can sell it later. Like, look at Skyward Sword, right? I mean, this is a perfect example of like, well, we don't have any new games coming out. Luckily, we have 40 years of backed up code we could just pull in whenever we want and just sort of draw from that well.
I bet most first party made games are backed up.
I would think so.
Right. Because they're done in the structure of,
but how long are they backed up for? Right. And like, probably, how often are they migrated and when do they get corrupted? And like, you know, it'd be interesting to trace, like, is the first Crash Bandicoot,
I'm sure,
the very original first, and where does it live? Like, who has it? And is it on a hard drive somewhere?
No, it's gotta be like, I bet it's on the cloud and it's deeply encrypted, right? Like, you know, that's one thing too. It's like, yeah, these things have to be secure, right? Like,
yeah, no, that's true. That's a good point. It's easy to lose something that's right. You like hide it so well, you lose it. I'm sure you've done that. I certainly have.
I've done that all
the time. This is important. I need to hide it, and then I'm like, oh shit, I hit it so well, I can't find it.
Yeah, I do that all the time. All right, but yeah, you know, I guess that was all. I just saw that pop up.
No, it's interesting.
I'm just like, who cares, man?
I think the entitlement thing is something I never thought about. That angle of like, it's if you want to preserve something, great, but the idea that anyone owes it to be preserved is really entitled.
Yeah, super. And you know, yeah, they don't care. They don't care about you. You know what I mean? Like, no one they don't care about. No one cares about you. So fucking shut up.
Yeah, and if you really like a game and want to find a copy, all power to you. And I will be happy it's preserved. But if the creator doesn't give a shit, it's totally fine.
All right, let's move on to one of my favorite subjects. Two of my favorite subjects, really.
Oh boy.
Yeah, this will be a quick one because I just wanted to. I just saw this article and it coincidentally was something we just talked about. You know what that is?
What's that?
Titty streamers.
Those are your two favorite subjects.
Yeah, titties and streamers. So I only bring this up because we literally just had a conversation about this, and then I saw this.
Yeah, and I think
article.
Yeah, the Kotaku article. Yeah, it was funny. It was basically elucidating exactly what we were talking about, and then I think I don't really feel a need to dive into it either. It's a big conversation, but I think the main thing, the takeaway from our conversation, and I had the same takeaway after reading the article, which I think is kind of cool, is that I think. The real crux of the issue here is not sex work. It's not, what's the word? Censorship. It's just Twitch fucking sucks.
Yeah.
Like, they suck at their jobs. They're completely arbitrary. They can't decide what they are. They have no idea and they have no future. And like, all of this is just a symptom of the fact that Twitch is really not a viable business at this point and like cannot figure out what they're doing. And all these sort of offshoots of it are, they're just symptomatic of its sort of deep entrenched sickness and lack of being able to pick a lane and figure out what it wants to be. And it's probably unsustainable.
Yeah, it's definitely unsustainable, right? I mean, I think in some ways it is kind of sex work, right? Like, but,
yeah, sure.
You know,
which is fine, but like, does Twitch want it or not?
Yeah, that's the thing, is Twitch advertising sex work, right? Like, you know, I think the real crux to me, and I agree, I think the actual problem is Twitch just sucks at doing what they're proposing to do, right? You know, I think the real crux to me is it's like, what is the point of these streams, right? Like what really is, what are you presenting and what do you expect, how do you expect users to participate with that, right? Because, you know, I think it's not naive, it's insidious to be like, I don't know what people do on the other end of this. You know what I mean?
Obviously,
that's not my problem, right? I stay within the rules and just do what I'm supposed to do. And it's like, you know, it's really, we want Twitch to be a place for teenagers and young men and maybe young ladies, I don't know, people to masturbate, right?
Sure.
Like, is that, and believe me, I'm all for masturbation. I'm all for titties. I'm all for all of these things, right? And I'm all for people making money. You know, if people want to pay you for a service, I will go on record saying, like, I have, like, seen hot titty girls on Twitter and followed them and seen them post a bunch of pictures and eventually paid them for an OnlyFans sub for a month, right? Because I was like, I look at all your fucking titty pictures. I can give you $8. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like I'm not a fucking animal, right? OnlyFans is a ripoff. You know, I would say only do it if you're like kind of donating to that person because it's never better on OnlyFans. But that's besides the point. But, you know, I think the problem is like this is unsustainable because you really are turning Twitch into a place for this kind of light sex work. Right. And you're expecting advertisers to kind of continue to finance this and parents. Right. Or whoever's paying for these Twitch subs or these. You know, Twitch Prime, you know, oh, you log into my Prime account and then you can use it on Twitch and, you know, and then you donate it to a girl in a hot tub with her fucking boobs out, which, you know, teach their own. But, you know, is that, can you really market that same? Can you really sell ads the same?
The issue. It's like, again, I don't have a problem with any of that except the idea that Twitch is like, no, we don't let that happen while letting it happen. And then arbitrarily punishing the streamers for taking advantage of this system. Like, you can't have it both ways, right? Like, if you want to have people do sex work on Twitch, which, again, great. Like, I have zero problem with that whatsoever. It's not a morality issue. It's just a matter of, like, I guess what it is they're telling advertisers this doesn't happen while it's clearly happening.
Yeah.
And that's not sustainable. And it's ridiculous. And they just, again, it gets back to they need to figure out what they want to be.
Yeah.
And arbitrarily banning some girl because she has a slightly lower cut top than someone else is fucking ridiculous.
Or the Chun-Li girl. And I can see why. Yeah, that's they bring up
in this article, exactly. Right? And that's the kind of shit I'm talking about where it's just like, that's not... That's just punishing random people for no reason. Like, that's ridiculous. To pretend like that's any sort of accountability is talk about naive. Like, that's fucked up. So just either ban it all or don't.
Yeah.
You can't have it both ways. Like, I don't... This sort of mealy, like, I don't know, we're kind of trying, sort of, we randomly make examples of random people is really grotesque and pathetic. And I'm really quite shocked that advertisers are still even on board with it. And again... You probably just get different advertisers. Like, God knows, if you want to turn it into light sex work channel, like,
yeah,
really, that would be successful, which is fine.
There are people that will pay for that, right?
How you, yeah, for sure. But how do you market it?
Yeah, how do you market it?
And well, then Amazon's involvement with that, I don't know how all that would work out. But
I don't know how Amazon strange. Allows us to go on this. Like, I mean,
yeah, I'm curious too. Like, there's something going on there, but it has, I guess I blame no one but Twitch.
Yeah, it has to seem like almost, I don't even call it an oversight, more so than just like willful ignorance, right? Like, everyone's just sort of covering their eyes and like letting
But to what end?
Letting it play out because it's money's coming in, right? Like,
yeah, but what? Yeah. Yeah.
There is no
it's just
end.
A matter of how much longer until it collapses, right? They got to make a commitment one way or the other. You can't just pretend it's not happening.
Yeah, I think there's a reality that Twitch in its current form can't continue, right? Like it won't continue to exist, right? And
yeah.
I feel like these kind of moments are like the death throes, right? Where
yeah.
it's like, whatever, I know this isn't going to work out, but we're going to get as much money as we can before it ends, you know? And...
yeah,
and this totally. Is one of those ways to do it. And yeah, I want to be clear. This is no judgment on the girls who do this.
No, not at all. No. I would totally do the same thing. Like, why wouldn't you?
I would definitely do it. I want to make a channel of just like, I don't know. Can you like just talk over other people's Twitches? Because I want
to. I think we were talking about our conversation. It still makes me laugh to think about. We were talking about like if you started streaming on Pornhub or something and you were streaming like porn games. And people could interact. But I love the idea that you're streaming like this really hardcore porn game, whatever it is, super explicit. But you have this rule in the chat that no one can say anything even remotely sexual.
Yeah, no or dirty even talk.
Suggestive.
Yeah.
Yeah, not even just dirty talk, but like anything except about
don't
like
be rude or get banned, or, right?
Yeah, and just ban anyone who's like, whoa, that girl's hot. Nope, ban. That guy's dick is huge. Banned. Or even someone who's like, that guy's pretty. Nope, banned.
I think
they just have to be like, the graphics are pretty good on this. What GPU are you running? And you'd be like, oh, this. Like, I just love that idea. It'd be so funny.
I think you do the opposite.
Not successful,
right?
But it would be hilarious.
And you ban anyone that makes a post that's not about ass, titties, or dicks, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's only
non-explicit
lewd.
Comments, yeah. Not allowed.
Only lewd comments allowed. yeah.
That'd be hard to enforce, right? It'd be an interesting like counterpoint to enforcement of like, I don't know if you were trying hard enough on that. That was gross, but it wasn't gross enough.
Yeah.
Sorry, you're banned.
Yeah. I mean, I do, you know, it's funny. I do feel bad for some traditional Twitch streamers, not because I think these people are stealing their viewers, right? I think it's a...
Yeah, that's a bullshit.
I think it's a different audience that does that.
Well, and even if it is the same audience, I'm sorry, but like they have a better product than you. Boo-hoo.
Well, I don't think that's really a fair assessment, right? Like, it's like if you allowed... prostitutes in the mall, right? And it's like, fuck you, Brookstone. People want to get their dick sucked, right? Like, you know,
yeah.
Like
it, I don't have a problem with that. It's capitalism, man.
No, I mean, sort. I mean, not really, right?
I don't think Brookstone could get mad because people would rather hang out with prostitutes than buy their product.
I think Brookstone could get mad if they entered an agreement with a place of business.
True.
And paid a rent a and point. Set up a business
no, right.
based
that's
on a set of parameters.
Not having prostitutes
yeah.
nearby.
And then
yeah,
those
no,
parameters
that's
were instantly flipped on them and someone was allowed agreed. To dominate the market, right? And take over their space, right? I think it's...
By breaking the
by
rules.
By breaking
yeah,
the
that's,
rules,
that's
right?
True.
Or by...
That's a valid
by point. A change in the rules that they weren't allowed to, like, have any place in. And I think that's...
Yeah.
That's where
again,
I...
Again, that, that's Twitch's fault.
Yeah. And, that, and that's where yeah. I said I think I'm sympathetic to existing streamers that are... affected by this, not because I think they're necessarily losing viewers to these streamers, but I think the platform is putting it putting those people's futures in jeopardy by kind of condoning this action, right? Because I think it's going to be harder for them to get sponsors, right? I think once this becomes more public, even a legitimate streamer is going to be like, oh, you know, I need you know, this much ad spend for Twitch. And it's like, oh, the place with the fucking hot tub streams, you know? And it's like, no, that's not what I do. You know, like...
like, well, maybe you should.
Yeah, well, maybe, right? Like, and I think that's destructive to...
I want to see all the Resident Evil speedrunners in hot tubs. That sounds hilarious.
That sounds scary, right? What if you hear something like in the bushes behind the hot tub, right?
And yeah. What if people go like jump out?
What if you hear stars from the bushes behind the hot tub? A giant
tentacle just flies out.
What the fuck are you going to do? That's terrifying.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah. So I do think, you know, to go back to the first thing we said, Twitch is fucked up. And I think Twitch does a bad job of.
Yeah. I mean, again, all this kind of comes down to Twitch really failing on pretty much every level.
Yeah. They don't take care of their talent at all.
Yeah, right? Yeah, really. That's kind of what it comes
and,
down to.
And they don't care about them, which seems obvious, and it shows, and I think that's...
And it will come back to bite them, for sure.
And really damage a lot of people, you know? I think...
Yeah, a lot of people will get caught in the crossfire.
Yeah, I think a lot of people have done really cool things to make really cool products on Twitch, and, you know, if they hurt my code Miko, I'll fucking kill them, right? that's the truth, okay?
Yeah.
They can't... Don't fuck with Miko.
She'll be all right.
First Dr. D and now this. What the fuck is the world coming
What's
to?
What's happening?
All right.
Well, that was a pretty long conversation for something we said we wouldn't talk about.
It was fun. It was fun talking about some of my favorite topics, so I was really into it. We talked about dicks and tits and all the good stuff. Twitch, all the
and Resident Evil and speedrunning. Holy shit, it all came together.
Wow, that was a fucking magical time we just had together. all right, you posted this story, so I'll let you take the lead on this one about Tencent.
It's not, I didn't read it super closely. It was just interesting to see. Basically, Tencent was involved in taking down some hacking company, which again, they keep referring to as like a hacking company. From what I understand, it was just a group of people who were selling ways to hack popular
some
games.
Some dudes.
And it was all in China, and it was a huge bust. And it was really the only thing I found interesting was, we've talked about this before, but... just how much money there is in breaking other people's products and then selling the people the ability to do it as well. It's such a strange business, you know, and just seeing how much money is involved in it. And again, this is an extreme example. It's just sort of fascinating, you know. It's like just like a dark market around essentially breaking games and then giving other people the option to break games. And it seems very esoteric and silly, you know.
Yeah,
it is. And it's not even, again, like piracy, I don't think it's a moral issue as much as it is just bizarre.
It is pretty bizarre. I like that they called the operation Chicken Drumstick.
Yeah, yeah, that's fun. That was probably the best part.
And they refer to them as a gang. Right? They refer to it as a cheater.
A gang of cheaters.
It makes me want
to... I don't know, something about the whole thing is very, very bizarre.
I want to start a gang. If you could be a gang, I thought you had to be a gang to be a gang, right? Like,
no, dude, you just call yourself a gang and all of a sudden you are one.
Cheater gang. Okay. That's what I want to be. I want to be a cheater gang.
I just love, I hope they like go to prison and then the in prison, people are like, what are you in for? Well, I give people the ability to reduce cooldowns as Widowmaker in Overwatch. And
they're like, oh, or shit. Whatever it is. Yeah, all the tables around shit, them clear, okay, right? Yeah. They're like,
Are you in that cheating gang I heard about? That 10 cents all pissed off.
Oh, you're part of the cheater gang. Let's get out of here. These guys are crazy.
I just thought it was funny.
It is fun.
That's really all. I just think, the whole market around breaking other people's IPs is sort of interesting.
It is fun because I think this is the kind of crime I'm into, you know,
it definitely feels like a victimless crime in a lot of ways. And I'm sure, you know, people could go off on why that's not true, but it's a very silly crime, I guess.
It's not victimless, but it's like fun, you know, it's like, it's like what I was talking about, you know, fighting about video games on the internet, I think last week or the week before. And it's like, if you're going to fight about something dumb, right? Or like sports teams or whatever. Like, don't fight about real things. And this is the kind of that in crime form, you know, where it's like,
I agree.
Don't hurt people, you know, don't commit, you know, crimes or take advantage of people. But
if you are going to commit crimes.
Yeah, but if you want to make game cheats and buy Lamborghinis and then go to prison, like, fuck yeah, I'm all in on that, right?
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
That seems real cool to me.
So cheating gang, Good job.
Yeah, Cheating Gang, I'm into it.
Operation Drumstick, I'm sorry it wasn't a success. I mean, I guess it was for a long time.
I hope they just were really fashionable, right?
Yeah, like they looked fucking great.
Yeah, they just,
that would be funny.
They were just fucking...
We should look up some pictures. Maybe we could report back next week.
They were just dripping with their Cheating Gang money, right? Like, that's what I hope. Yeah. And they always carried tablets with them for no good reason, right?
But well, they had a good reason. Just no one knew what it was.
Yeah, they always had to have, like, a tablet at their side, right? And they would, like, just randomly, like... punch something in.
People are like, are you like a day trader? I'm like, nah.
I'm making, hell no. Making cheats.
I got some other stuff.
I gotta release the 0 day. Okay, Holmes.
Operation Drumstick is a go. Yeah.
Oh shit, they're coming with the drumstick. Get out of here. The spot's blown.
Get in our Lamborghini and drive the fuck out.
Oh, I bet they had jet skis too. They gotta have jet skis. So. If they don't have fucking jet skis, fuck those guys. Right?
Yeah, fuck the Cheating Gang.
Fuck the Cheating Gang. I love it. All right. Last thing we'll talk about real quick before we get out of here. MLB The Show 21 coming to Game Pass at launch.
Ooh. Tell me about why I should care about that. This isn't like a sports thing. I just mean I don't know anything about this game.
Are you doing one of those fucking sports game meme fucking nerd jokes again?
No, that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't play sports games. I don't really care for them. But no, that's not why I said that. It was more just tell me why this is a story.
Well, this is a story because of who makes MLB The Show.
The MLB?
No. Hmm. That was not the right answer.
Okay, what's the right answer?
Sony PlayStation Studios makes MLB The Show.
And you say it's coming out on Xbox.
It's coming out day one on Game Pass on Xbox.
Better get an Xbox.
You better fucking go buy an Xbox. So this is the first time MLB The Show's gone multi-platform. They talked about it, I want to say, like, last year or the year before. Because it's been a couple years
off.
It's
been in the pipeline.
For MLB The Show. It's made in... I want to say they make it in Sony San Diego. I only remember that because I'm from San Diego. But I'm going to sneeze. Oh, I'm sorry, everyone. I'm sorry. That was intense. Okay. I'm going to keep that in, by the way. I'm not going to... I don't have a mute button.
Yeah, okay.
So that's just part of the show.
You don't have a mute button? We've been doing this show for like 2 or 3 years and you don't have a mute button
yet? You have a mute button?
Yeah, but it's real... I never use it.
Exactly, right? I could go into my interface and try and fix it, but that's not the point. We're talking about MLB The Show.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, so Sony makes it. They announced, I want to say last year, that it was going to be multi-platform, and now it's going to be day one on... Game Pass. A lot of people were very what's the word I want to use? I don't know, is it bullish on this move? Because, you know, this is seeing it as kind of a bad sign for Sony, right? Like, oh, I can't believe
so that would be bearish then.
Bearish. I actually invest in stocks and I don't know the difference between a bear and a bull.
A bull's up, bear's down, basically.
Is that a Snoop Dogg song? Bulls up, bears down.
It should be. It's the Cheating Gang theme song.
It's the Cheating Gang theme song. I love that. Yeah, so that's so funny. But yeah, so people were, you know, had a lot to say about if this was a good or a bad thing for Sony. And, you know, my kind of takeaway was that do people just not see what Sony's been doing for the past...
Yeah, Sony seems to probably know what they're doing, it seems like.
And they're, I mean...
Like they probably thought this through. I doubt it was a spur-of-the-moment decision.
And it's not a surprise for them, right? Like, like Sony has, since the PS4's launch, and since the end of the PS3, really, has shown that, like, they make their money by making tentpole first-person games that are exclusive to the platform that...
Like Nintendo,
right? So they took the Nintendo plan. It's funny. I was talking to a friend who is an executive at Sony. And you know, we were basically talking about the fact that they really did kind of take a page from Nintendo and understood that, like, yeah, you just make tentpole first-party games and people kind of have to buy your platform, right? Like, like, people want to play these games, and so they will. They'll buy your platform. They'll play this game.
Yeah.
As long as they're good, you're going to sell consoles, right? People will spend $600 to play a game if it's good, you know? And and so, you know, in my mind, it's just like they have the data. They know people aren't buying PlayStations to play MLB The Show. They probably sell plenty of copies of it, right? But, you know, they're like, this isn't our system seller. Their attach rates probably are the same as their attach rates for God of War or whatever, right? So they're like, people are going to buy the PlayStation anyways because they want to play God of War. So
yeah,
why not get some money out of this game?
And also, I'd imagine the license is probably expensive, so that's probably another way to offset the license fee as well, is be like, hey, let's just put it in front of more people. Like, they don't have to worry about that with God of War or Horizon or Uncharted or any of those games, but, like, this maybe is a little more expensive. They're like, hey, this would be a very easy, simple way to offset it without in any way infringing on our brand IP, right?
Yeah, I assume that part of the licensing deal actually was to go multi-platform.
Yeah,
probably. Initially, I assume that was probably something MLB... pushed for, but you know, like they you know, like that's understood. Like, and I think the reason that they allowed it to go Game Pass day one is because it's like, if we're kind of gonna have to launch it multi-platform, like, let's get paid. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, let's get some Xbox money, right? Like we'll take Microsoft's money. Like, we're Sony. We don't care. It's their check's clear. We're happy with it. You know, like, I just don't see the downside on this, right? For Sony or for Microsoft for that part, right? It seems to just work for everybody.
And MLB. And people want to play the game. Like, what's the downside?
Yeah, I don't know how many people play this game, but there are a lot of people that love baseball. It is shocking to me how many people love baseball, because it is the fucking worst. Like, do you like baseball?
Yeah. I don't really like many sports, but I agree with you. Like, baseball always seemed like the least interesting, but I'm sure, you know, it's interesting that there's like physics and, you know, it's kind of interesting, I guess. I don't know. I don't find sports very compelling, but I will say, if I was going to watch a sport, it probably wouldn't be baseball.
Yeah. I've watched a lot of sports. I've gone to many a sports game, many a baseball game. And, even when you go to
good hot dogs.
Yeah. Good hot. Well, you know, it's funny. Even when you go to baseball games, right? Like, there's so many people at these baseball games, and like my brother had season tickets for a few years, so we'd go all the time, and we wouldn't even watch the baseball games. You just go to the bar and like hang out, because there's like bars in the stadiums. Like, the stadiums are these,
it's like, just go to a bar with a game on in the background. Yeah. You'd have the same experience.
These stadiums are just like hang spots now, especially baseball stadiums. Yeah. It's like, yeah, people are just here to be here, you know. It's like,
it's like going to church.
It's like going to church. You just want to be seen, right? But it is funny. But that was just kind of my take on that. I feel like people kind of got a little twisted on that one, thinking it was some kind
of... It's not like God of War is going to be on Game Pass day one.
Yeah.
You know?
To me, that would be shy. If we saw a real first party single player, like one of these big games that Sony is just so famous for, going
The Last of Us Part 3 is on Xbox, that'd be crazy.
Yeah, but you know, no one's buying an Xbox to play Outriders, that's for sure.
Yeah,
god, that game, it's
people are talking about it.
Are they?
Yeah,
who?
But I think that's just because there's nothing else
coming. I think that's like, the thing, right?
What else are you gonna talk about?
I feel like that game is gonna be old next week.
I think I wouldn't be surprised if it was successful.
Really?
Just because there's nothing else.
Yeah, I guess the timeline definitely helps it, right?
Yeah, I think it was a really smart time to release it. There's nothing to compete against it. People are sick of Destiny. And that's it. That's pretty much all you need. Like, it could probably be anything.
It's just so bad.
Yeah, I didn't love it.
It makes me want to play Destiny, and that, to me, is...
Well, it's the same people who made Bulletstorm, which is interesting, because Bulletstorm is a pretty interesting game. But this is so uninteresting, that's kind of crazy that it came from the same studio.
I can see the lineage, though, in the characters.
Yeah, but Bulletstorm's like tongue-in-cheek, so it makes sense. This is like...
I mean, visually, the characters. Yeah. Like, they're all kind of broed out style, like Bulletstorm.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's a bunch of fucking...
Bulletstorm is the first video game I ever reviewed.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. Like, I've got paid to review,
a bunch of hoorah fucking super soldiers, you know.
Yeah, but Bulletstorm's a joke, which is nice.
Yeah, so is Outriders. All right, with that, let's... anything else you want to jump into before we get out of here?
Yeah, we're not going to beat that. No way, man.
Yeah. All right, thank you guys so much for listening. TechYapPodcast@gmail.com. TechYapPodcast on Twitter and Facebook.
Send us your spicy takes.
Yeah, we love spicy takes so much.
That's what we're about around here.
Yeah. Thank you guys. We love you. Go and play some games.